Okay, everybody, so let's begin.
It's fine. It's perfectly fine. Don't worry. We'll survive without it. Don't worry.
Okay, everybody, so let's begin. We're up to the end of Micha, the last Pesukim. We've gone through most of the commentators. We have just left to do the Mamari Chazal. We are on page 530. 530. Okay, we went through the three Pesukim. We went through the Mitzudos, Rashi, the Radak and the Malb. Now let's do the Mamari Chazal. Baruch Atah Adonai Elohim Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehyeh Bidvaroi. Mikel Kamaicha Noise Oven V'Oivar Pesha L'Sheres Nachal Asoy Omar Rava. Page 530, Likutei Shas. On the bottom of the, on the right side on the bottom. Omar Rava. Kol Hamadru Al Midoisav Ma'avirin Loi Al Kol Pesha Av. A person who does not demand what he is entitled to, someone insults him and he just takes it in stride, does not make an issue, does not fight back. The word ma'avir al midoisav is a very, very rich.
Someone who doesn't retaliate.
Ma'avir, you let it just pass right over you. Al midoisav. Midoisav means your measures, which usually is interpreted to mean that your emotions, your what you feel that you're entitled to. Okay, there are many, whatever you mean, a person is overlooking. He's not demanding. He's not insulted. He knows how to deal with an insult. Ma'avirin loy al kol pisha'av in Shemayim. They overlook all of his transgression. Shenemar noisei avon v'oiver al pesha. The Bar makes a beautiful drasha. Lemi noisei avon, in heaven, to whom? What? The hardest one. The hardest, they overlook even the most severe. Noisei avon, lemi noisei avon. To whom does heaven forgive sin? The answer is, lemi she'oiver al pesha. So they didn't give me shlishi. They didn't give me the cover that I deserve. They didn't stand up for me. They didn't give me a free ticket at the Sea of Mashas.
Did you say this is always from the throw? Or would you say it's from the throw, the as well? And then if it is that...
It depends. It all depends. There is no answer to that question. I don't believe there is. It all depends on the situation. Every situation is different. So, I mean, yes and no. It all depends. Yeah, these are general statements. And each situation has to be understood uniquely as to what the halacha would be. We don't have an answer. It's a midah. It's not a halacha. According to the halacha, you would be entitled, you would be correct in demanding and standing up and saying, this is not fair. This is not fair. I deserve better. And a person just overlooks the insult, comes to a shul. He's there in the shul for many, many years, and they don't give him the proper cover. They don't give him an aliyah. They don't give him this. They don't give him that. He has yard sight, and they don't give him maftir. They give him instead hagva. They give him galila, whatever. They give him something. You know, they don't give him
COVID.
What? Yeah, but that's sometimes giving a person cover is even worse than giving him nothing, because I'll give you an example by a wedding. Go to let's say a very choshva rough. And there's just not enough kibbutz. There are not enough brachos left for him. You have a wedding, very kind of a wedding, and you have seven brachos, right at the end. The seven brachos: Bar Pri Hagafen, Yoytze Adam, V'chulu, all the way until Asher Bara. And there's a very distinguished rabbi in the audience who came, made a trip to come to the wedding. And sorry, we just don't have a kibbutz to give him. We have to give the two grandfathers. We have to give the uncle. We have to give this, the chassan's Rosh Hashiva. We have to go give this and that. And guess what? There's just nothing left to him. So I have a solution. We'll give him in aid by the Tanoim. Okay? So for some people, wow, that's such a chashva kibbut. To go give this person, to make him an aid by the Tanoim, is a disgrace. And for him, and for certain types of people. So what's the solution? The solution is do nothing. Don't give him a kibbutz at all. Better sometimes to do nothing than to give him a kibud that is not lefi kivoidai. For some people, wow, you give an aid by the Tanoim, that's like a home run. That's out of the ballpark.
Can you have three aid?
I have 200.
No, you cannot. You cannot. That's not the way we do galpi eshnaim or shloish eidim yumas hames. Right. So why don't we go call? It's very good. Why don't we call up to a chasna? Five witnesses. All the you five with witnesses. It's a very good question. Why don't we do that? But we don't. We don't.
But we say that we have miyach of these, then the other one should not be counted because.
No, it's not so simple to do that. It's a controversial thing. What you just said is that the person who makes the announcement should say that we designate these two witnesses to the exclusion of all others. Why? Because if you have one group of witnesses, and in that group there are people who are disqualified because they're ganovim, or because they're relatives, so then their disease spreads to the entire group, and it's as if no one saw the wedding at all. So if you have over here, if you have two witnesses, let's say you have five witnesses. Five, if you were to designate five witnesses, and one of the five would be clearly, according to halacha, disqualified because he's a relative. Okay, he's the grandfather. Or he's, and the Amaratzim, they don't know the halacha. So they asked one of the grandparents to be one of the witnesses, and together with four other witnesses. And the other four other witnesses are the biggest tzaddikim, no problem, they're perfect. The being that together they've been designated as one single group, the one that's no good ruins it for the other four. So it's not necessarily good to expand your group of witnesses. And also, yes, a good question. How, it's just not done. Now, even that thing you put on is to go into say that we designate these two witnesses to the exclusion of all others is not necessarily a good thing, because many places can suggest that in the event that we discover later on that one of the two witnesses is disqualified because we did not realize that he was a relative, or we do discover the next day that he's in prison because he is a ganef, he's clearly a ganef, and a ganef is pasul la'edus. So does that mean retroactively the wedding was not a kosher wedding? It could very well be that's the case. You're in a lot of trouble. So what is the solution? The solution is, since they did not say outright these two witnesses to the exclusion of everyone else in the room, we automatically can say b'di'evad, every single person in the room is a witness. Oh, but what about the people who are not kosher to serve as witnesses? The father of the groom, father of the kallah, the relatives, or ganavim? It's a given they're not witnesses. You can't ruin it. If you see an event, if 100 people see an event, the person, and happens to be one of the people seeing the event is a person that is disqualified to testify, that doesn't ruin it for everyone else unless he has been designated to be the witness. So the people in the room who are no good automatically by default are not included. Everyone else in the room automatically is included. Oh, but you'll say they did not stand up by the chasna and kala, and they didn't pick up the veil. You know, so who says you have to see every single detail? Okay. You're there, you were invited, you saw in front of you a bride and a groom, and you saw they said some words. It's good enough. Yeah.
Yeah, but actually it's two witnesses there, because the Mesabek Rush is also a witness.
Exactly. Correct. So that's why if you go to a wedding and they make the announcement that this is these two people being designated to the exclusion of all others. Ooh. Some people do that. Hmm. It's controversial if that's the correct thing to do. What? You're asking for trouble, exactly. The best thing is less is always more.
But the yichud also definitely designated, there's no one else around.
Well, no, there are other people sitting around there. It's not necessarily so. It depends where. It depends where the yichud room is. One hall, some halls, the yichud room is on another floor, who knows where it is. And in some halls, the very small halls, right there by the entrance where they put them in the yichud room, other people are walking around. It all depends. And the yichud is a very lightweight thing, because that's the yichud is not really the yichud is not a significant part of the wedding. The parts of the wedding that count are the harayat mikudeshes, the sheva being under the chuppah, that's, and then the next thing you can say is the badekin counts. The yichud, some you should know that some I think even by Sfar, they have yichud.
No, they don't.
They don't have. They don't even have, yichud is not. It's something that we do. it's not so simple, the whole yichud. Okay, this is not a show on marriage, but the point over here is, we have over here, in this Maimon Chazal, we got into the discussion of kavod, the person is insulted, he asked the question, so they gave him kavod, not necessarily so. Sometimes giving a person kavod is more harmful than giving him nothing. If it's not lefi kavodah, you don't give that person that item. You don't go give today, the way we live, the convention is, you don't give galila to an adam chashav. That's the way it is. Okay, you'll tell me, but it says in Shulchan Aruch that ha-goyleloi neutel schar k'neged kulam enoch inami. I know you know what it says there, but that's not the minik olam for different, whatever the reasons are. There are reasons. So to go give the most chashav person who comes to a guest in the community, who comes there for Shabbos, to give him galila, you're asking for trouble. You're being mevazahim. Okay, sometimes if you can't give him a kibbutz, don't give him any kibbutz at all. That's the ultimate kibbutz. That's not our topic over here. Leminas oven, lemish oval pesha, Rav Huda bar Rav Yeshua cholash. He got sick. All Rav Papa lishayule bay, lishol bishle moy. Rav Papa came to visit him. Chazye de chalish le olma. He saw, Rav Papa saw that Rav Huna Bray Rav Yeshua is about to die. Amar lehu, Rav Papa said to him, Tzivisu le ze vatsa. He said to him, do you have tachrichim? Or prepare tachrichim. Rav Huna, you're about to die. Let's get ready. Now that's, you say that this, you're out of your mind? That's how you talk to a guy who's sick? You're pushing him out. You walk into a hospital, you see a guy's on all these machines, and he's very, very sick, so you say to the nurse, turn off all the machines and let's get this over with already. Let's get this over with. Turn off the machines, right?
I didn't interpret it the way you just said it.
Yeah, well, how did you interpret it?
That he appeared to be deathly ill.
Yeah.
And he asked him if he was prepared, if he needed anything.
Okay, it's all how you say the words. It's similar, okay. He said, let's now say, Shrivera, Tfila Shrivera.
Obviously, this is going to be a setup or something.
Lesoif Ispach, guess what? He told the nurses, turn off all the machines. Let's get this over with. I have to go somewhere. I want the funeral to be today so I can go tomorrow on vacation. And what happened? They turned off all the machines, and Mechaya HaMesim, the fellow, he healed. Rav Huna healed. He got back 100%. Next day, he comes to yeshiva. He's back giving a shiur. So Rav Papa was very embarrassed. I said to you, you're going to die. I even started making the preparations.
The speech.
I prepared the speech. You know how many stories there are in history? In Jewish history? This is a topic of Jewish history which there are books on, of Rabbanim. What did Rabbanim do in the olden days? Rabbanim, how do they show their koyach? There was no such thing as Torah anytime back then, right? There was no online opportunities to pontificate and give. And there was no dafyomi, by the way, back in those days. So what did Rabbanim do? Shabbos? They didn't say drush on Shabbos. They said a drush twice a year. Twice a year on Shabbos HaGadol and Shabbos Shuvah. So what did the Rabbanim, when did they make big drushes? Hespedim. Hespedim was a big, big deal.
Appeals.
A what?
Appeals.
I don't know. They had appeals. They did. It could be. But one of there's no question about it. If you study Jewish history, one of the big things in Jewish history of Rabbanim was Hespedim. Hespedim, because and it was the Kavod Acharon. And what they say, I mean, it's not a joke. It was Kedai to die to hear the Hesped.
Kedai to die?
It was worthy to die to hear the Hesped. Okay, I told you once, my grandfather, Zichron Levrach, he came from such a generation. Where when people died, they gave, you know, they knew how to be mass, but today it's an art, which today is gone, doesn't exist. There's no such thing today. You go to a levaya, there's any semblance of what it really means, kavod acharon. There's an expression. We're here to give the so-and-so kavod acharon. Everyone in the chapel is wearing their coat. Everyone is holding a smartphone, texting. Can't wait to get this over with, right? We're here because why are we even here? Because whatever we're here, all depends who it is. Okay, hopefully the person is not a young person. He's an elderly person. And you're here not for him because all of the person who died, all of his friends already died, or they're so old, They're in nursing homes or who knows where they are. So you're really here to give kavod to your chaverim because it's their father, because it's their parent. Do you really know the mates though? Do you really care? No. You're here because my friend is suffering a loss. For him, it's painful. So I'm here, but you really don't know. So you're there in your coat. You come late. You're worried about it. You get a ticket because you parked by a hydrant. And you have a smartphone. And a rabbi gets up. The rabbi
speaks.
You don't understand what he says. And the rabbi sometimes the drushes, maybe you could. It's just a matter of changing the name. The template of the drush is all the same. Just the question is, you change. I once went to a levaya, and it was clear the person to give the hands had no clue he was talking about. And he said that this fellow, he came to a shir once on a Shabbos afternoon, and he knew, he understood the oisiyos gedoilos and the oisiyos kitanos. The big letters and the small letters. The Gemara and the Rashi. I was like almost laughing, like this drasha he's making over here. It's like what's going on over here? And unfortunately, that's how it is. That's the way it is. That's not the way it was, Rabbeisai, back in the day.
Well, let's hear how it was.
Yeah. It was the real deal. They had professional mekoinenim, men and women. They would wail, they would cry. They had rabbanim who knew the person. And rabbanim who had the most creative ideas. They were able to be yoyred l'soif oimko yishol davar, to fataych the person, and to give kovoid acharon, to give him kovoid. So my grandfather, he came from a world where he saw this. What it meant to deliver a eulogy. Back wherever he lived in Poland. And then he came to America and the She'eres HaPleita, Gedolei Yisrael, they died. Great people that are so great. We can't even fathom how many great people there were. And they died here in America. No one really appreciated them. So my grandfather, my mother once told me, he went to a levaya, he came back from a levaya of a truly Adam Gadol, and he came back and he said to my mother, they had the maspidim, they sat at a table, they didn't stand, they sat at a table, the coffin was in the room, and there were some people in the room, and the maspidim sat at a table, and there was a glass of water on the table, and a little lecture, So he said to my mother, it wasn't kedai to die for such a spadim. It wasn't kedai to die for such a spadim. In other words, if you have a good hesped, it's kedai to die, covered, to give real covered. I'll tell you a good joke. See, you know, you don't even know people. My sister, she said something to me that blew my mind. She said, I was writing ads for a journal. Okay, not that I know how to write. I don't know how to spell one word. Okay, but I had no choice. I had to go, and I have a friend that's being honored, so I have no choice, and I have to work my head off to put in words, a few nice words about somebody. So I'm working, I'm thinking, and then someone calls me up and says, can you help me? Can you also write one for me? So I was writing a couple of ads. Not that I know what I'm doing altogether at all. Writing the ads, and I'm working very, very hard. And then when I finished, I said to my sister, you know, I have to now go to the mikveh. I made a joke. I feel like I'm in a chapel delivering a eulogy. And I'm trying to, like a lebedika hesped, a living hesped. Right, a lebedika. Now that I've finished, we can leave the chapel, we can leave the dead, because they're giving a eulogy, right, of a living person. I made a joke. So she says to me, just the opposite. You should have gone to the mikvah before you sat down to write, because writing, giving kavod to someone in a journal is like writing a Sefer Torah.
Wow. Who said that?
My sister said that to me.
Wow.
And like my eyes popped out.
Wow.
To get that, wow. She's right.
Why is she right? The dime a dozen.
It's a dime a dozen. If you make it into a dime, if you make it like that, you're right. It all depends what you make out of it. I saw a journal. I'm not joking with you. There are companies that do this professionally. A yeshiva. They have a yeshiva. They have no. They don't have any interest in doing this. They have a fundraising event. They have to have a journal. So someone makes a journal for them. They have a computer program. The computer program has about 1,000 different expressions, and they press a button. and the computer generates, puts together at random different expressions and spits out an ad. This guy wants an ad. He doesn't know how to write. He doesn't want to write. But he says, I want you make the ad for me. So the program, you press the button and it spits out this ad. And you look at the journal. If you don't want to read the journal, you just look at the journal. Wow, look at that. It's a nice journal. In the garbage, right? They didn't take it home. And then if you open them, you start reading it. Wait a minute. This looks very familiar here. This looks also very familiar. And then you figure out the whole journal is the same thing. So some crazy computer program generated a whole journal. It's a fraud. Whole thing is a fraud. There are, in between a couple of pages, there are some original things. But 90%. And I was like, totally blown away. Blown away. On the other hand, I'll give you, the Chaim Berlin, they have two dinners. They have the regular dinner. It's about this year's journal is about 1,200 pages. 1,200 pages. And then they have a Koilel dinner. A Koilel dinner, a much, much smaller scale. It's like a Malava Malka almost. They have it in the yeshiva, and it's a separate account to pay the Koilel Yungalite. It's a Koilel dinner, and it's a whole different type of dinner. By the main dinner, they're looking to honor, oh, Shalom Aleichem. Mr. Bloom, welcome back. By the regular dinner, the regular dinner, who they honor, they look for the biggest millionaire they can possibly find in the world. Okay, it doesn't matter who he is. Money, money, money. By the Koilel dinner, the minig is they honor someone in the Koilel. A Talmud Chacham, a Rebbe, someone who was once a member of the Koilel, who is now is established, is a Talmud Chacham, is a Rebbe. And the people who give in the ads are his chaverim. And it's a small journal. It's a small journal. It's a fraction of the size. And every year it depends. Sometimes it's smaller, it's bigger. Sometimes they don't even do it. There's not enough ads, so they just include it in the regular journal. So many years they put out a separate journal when they honor an Adam Chashuv. I'm telling you, it's not a journal. It is mamish a sefer. It's a sefer Torah. The Yungalite who write their ads, in the ads they write the Chidushei Torah. In the ads they write some of the most incredible things you've ever seen. The regular journal, that's 1,500 pages, is like a computer-generated journal. Okay, Chaim Berlin journal is not so big. I know the person who actually does the whole thing, who actually works on it, works his head off on it, and it's pretty good compared to other places. It's really, really an enormous amount of effort goes into doing it well. Okay, they really put a lot of work. This thing that I saw from this other yeshiva, I could not believe what I was seeing. My eyes were popping out. And the Chaim Berlin journal, they put a lot of time, they really do, they put a lot of work, really. There's one person that works night and day for weeks to get it done right. And then the Koilel journal, it's mamish a sefer. They once honored a very big Talmud Chacham who is literally the last person in the world. See here, Sperling would appreciate all this stuff. Literally the last person in the world that would ever allow himself to be on. I could not. When I saw the invitation, I said to myself, he's being honored? Like, he's a guy that he would run to the other end of the world. So obviously they took him into a room and they put a gun to his head and they said to him, if you're not going to be honored, you're not going to wake up tomorrow. And you don't have a choice. The Rashiv himself did this to him. No choice, because we need the money and we need your name. Whether you like so, no, begrudgingly, he had no choice. So he was a very big Talmud Chacham, and all of his Talmidim, many, they came, they all sent in ads. And the ads are like, just like, out of this world. So I met him on the street one day and I said to him, I have the journal. I said, the journal, I put it on the bookcase with all the svar. It's mamish a sefer. Mm. So he looks at me and he says to me, you're right. You're right. And it's true. So it all depends what you make out of it. If Chaim Siegel they put out a book of Chaim Siegel. So what his whole yisoid in chinuch was, he taught high school boys. His yisoid in chinuch was, you make out of a high school boy what you want. They're at an age where if you want to treat them like babies, they'll be babies. If you want to treat them like adults, they'll be adults. If you take a boy in sixth grade, you take a boy in sixth grade, and you speak to him like an adult, and you have derech eretz for him, the same way you have derech eretz for a 60-year-old man, the kid will just laugh, will do stupid, foolish things. Because a kid in sixth grade is a baby, whether you like it or not. An adult, you don't talk to an adult and say to an adult, if you'll be a good boy, I'll give you some candy. I'll give you an award. I'll go and I'll, you don't talk to an adult like that. Adult. A high school boy is nishtahi nishtaher. If you talk to a high school boy like a baby, he's a baby. You'll reinforce the element of being a baby. But a high school boy already is mature enough that if you speak to him and you engage him as an adult, he will respond and grow into an adult. That was his big insight in chinuch, and I didn't appreciate this until I went to another high school when I used to daven mincha in another high school every single for a period of time. But in his malach was, he took a ninth grade boy, and he would speak to a ninth grade boy as if he was speaking to a contemporary. Here he is, he's probably at that time 50, 60, 70 years old, and he has a boy who's in ninth grade, how old is the boy in ninth grade? 14 years old? And he would talk to him as if he was talking to someone his age, a contemporary. And the boy, who's already a bar das, 14 years old, understands, you know, that someone's respecting him as a person. And being that you're at that age, I have to stand up to the plate and be that person who's talking. If you look at me as being a real person, I have to be an adult. If he was in sixth grade and you would speak to him like an adult, the sixth grader would just laugh and just act foolishly because he's not yet mature enough to respond in a normal way. So that's how he conducted himself in his high school. Okay, it's really true. He spoke to the boys in high school like they were his contemporaries. It's not real. Okay, I didn't appreciate it. I finished high school. I was in Beis Medrash for many years, and then I went to another place, and then I daven mincha every day in a high school, a very choshva high school. I daven mincha there every day in the high school, and in the high school's mincha, and the principal was there, and the principal walked up and down the aisles, and I saw every day how he interacted with these boys, and he treated the boys in high school like babies, literally like he's talking to kindergarten children, and it really hit me. Now I appreciate what I have. That here you have the same age group, you can make, and because he treated them like kindergarten children, they responded like kindergarten children, and they never matured. I don't know if they ever matured, but it's a whole different ball game. So you're talking about a journal, you're right. A journal is a very choshva thing. It gives people an opportunity to be mechabed somebody. If you want to make it into a joke, so be it. It's just nourished. I told you, most of the journals you see are just, you know, it's just a gimmick. Fundraising, who needs it anymore? They don't want to do it anymore. It's a waste of money. They only print a fraction of a few of them.
The electronic journals.
Then they put the electronic journals on the tables. They do all these techniques. But there are places, if you make it choshev, it's choshev. If you don't make it choshev, it's not choshev. So I just found that comment to be very jarring. I was working very hard to give kavod to a person, and I made a joke out of it. I made a litzonis out of it. It's like I'm giving a hesped. Now that I've given my hesped, I've come in contact with the dead. Ah, now when you walk out of the funeral chapel, you have to wash your hands, right? If you want to do better, you go to the mikvah. So I said, now that we're finished, we can go to the mikvah. And she said back to me, you're making a big mistake. You should have gone to the mikvah before you sat down to write. Because writing, putting in words the qualities and the milas of a person, You're writing a Sefer Torah. This is sacred. You should go to the mikveh before. That was powerful. I'm telling you, it's not so often someone shakes you up like that. When you make a joke and someone turns the tables on you and shows you what life is really all about. If you make it choshev, it's choshev. If you make it into a joke, it's a joke. Kichoymer biyad hayoytzer. Life is choymer. It's nothing but matter. It's what you make out of it. How you value what chashivus you give to something. Sometimes one person in the room makes a comment, destroys the whole aura, the whole chashivus. Sometimes you bring a person of just, you have one person of dignity to be present. It changes. I know someone who works in a law firm. And the law firm, a bunch of menuvalim, mushchasim, ganavim, and rishoyim. And every deal is the number of four-letter words. There are more four-letter words that are said at this meeting than books there are in this room. But in this firm, there was a frum girl. There was a frum girl who came in every day, honest, a Beis Yaakov girl, with dignity, tznius, alamilas. And the boss, and she was at work there, and her boss called and says, today we're having a very important meeting, and you must be there. I don't care what you're doing, cancel all your plans, whatever you're working on, don't go out to lunch. You must be in this meeting. I don't care. So she says, I have nothing to do with this project. I'm not on this deal. I have a lot of work to do. I'm overwhelmed. I also wanted to go out to lunch. He says, no. Why do you need me? I have nothing. He says, because when you're in the room, there's no nivel peh. There's dignity in the room. Just sit at the table. You don't have to say one word. I need you to be there to bring dignity. So a goyisha menuvalim, they said this to a frum girl, just sit there at the table. Your presence brings dignity. Is there a greater kiddush Hashem than this?
She's the rabbi.
Okay, there's a greater kiddush Hashem to add dignity. Chashivas. Unbelievable. It's all what you make out of it. Okay?
A similar rabbi, Meir Weiss, was saying in the bungalow colony, in lunchtime, they would go play basketball. So sometimes he would join them.
No.
Or tennis, or something. And then he felt like guilty to the next neighbor because he says he made making a lot of noise. So he went to excuse himself, and the neighbor says, what are you excusing me? I have to thank you. When you are not here, the language is unbelievable. At least now noise, but it's kosher noise.
I used to go to an Ashkal minyan. Okay, Ashkal minyan. Only men. Only men. It was like a men's, like over here, like a men's club. Okay, it was a men's club. It was a joke. The whole davening was a total litzanis. It really was. It was like, I shouldn't say total. It was not the way it should be. One day, a woman shows up. A woman shows up. Oh, great. What do we do now? So it's in a shul. So they have a machitza. The machitza is there. And the woman, she also wants to dive. So she's behind the machitza. And I noticed when the woman was on the other side of the machitza, it was a different minyan. The whole minyan was there because they knew there's a woman listening. The presence of a woman on the other side of the machitza totally changed the behavior of the men on the other side of the machitza. Wow. There's someone watching.
That's the Gemara.
There's someone listening.
Rabbi Eliezer with the Talmidim.
What's
like
the Gemara?
The fear of Hashem be like the
Halavai, the fear of Hashem should be like the fear, but it's similar, but it's a little different. The fear of Bas of Adam.
Yeah.
When a person is here, it's a whole different environment. Yeah.
Dennis Prager likes to say the role of women is to civilize men.
It's true. That's right. It's true. Women have a certain dignity that men do not have, and their presence keeps, they're the moral conscience of men. Mm-hmm. A woman is the moral conscience of civility. If the world only had men and no women, if you can just reproduce by, I don't know, some technique, by laying eggs, and there would only be men in this world, the world wouldn't be here anymore. This world would be long gone. We would have destroyed this world 10 times over long, long ago. It's only because a woman is the moral conscience of men. It's true. There's nothing to talk about. Okay, let's go further. So back over here, so the Nilasif Ispach Have Mikasif Rapapa Limech Ziyeh. We're on the first wide line on page 430 in the Likutei Shas.
530.
Page 530, the first wide line Likutei Shas. The story was that Rav Huna was deathly ill. Rav Papa went to visit him. Rav Papa saw that he was about to die. He told the nurses, turn off all the machines. Let's get this over with, so to speak. And then the next day, he sees he's there. He's alive. He's alive and well. He comes to Shir to give a Shir in the yeshiva. So Rav Papa was embarrassed. I wrote you off. I told you about the speeches. I wanted to tell you about the speeches. That's how we got into the whole thing about the Hespedin. So I told you, in the olden days, they knew how to get away with me. We got to stop doing this. Is that in the olden days, Rabbanim, their big thing was they gave Hespedin. That was the big, I told you, go to Levi today, Chaval. We got into this thing. I want to finish this off. They know how to give kavod. Today, there's no. But years ago, they knew how to give kavod. At kidei kach. Listen to this. This is a fact, a historical fact that we have no. From the first time a rav got a job as a shtela, the first moment he saw his baal batin, he was already planning their hespedin. I'm not joking. And he would actually, ad kidei kach, he would write down in his notebook what he's going to say by their hespedin. I'm not joking. This is a fact. And he would see this guy, oh, wow, what a maisa. I got to write that down, get ready for his hesped. The guy's healthy. The guy's alive and kicking. What are you writing down his hesped for? He write it down. The newspapers. The newspapers. Yeah. You're right. They need to have on file celebrities. But they do that for practical reasons. But I'm talking about this was an art. Because the Rabbanim, this is what they did. So right away, they got to know that they write it. And they wrote notebooks. And then what happened many, many times, someone broke into their house, or someone somehow, they stole the notebook. And they saw that people read all of the hespedim that the rabbi wrote, was ready to rattle off for his baal batin. And the rabbanim were very embarrassed. This story probably, I don't say hundreds of times, but the number of times that this happened was very common. Rabbanim had personal notes for what they were planning to say by the hespedim of the baal batin, because back in the day, that's where the rabbanim shined. It was a big event. A funeral was a big event, and they prepared way in advance, and the notes were discovered. And they were put to shame that they were already planning their funeral way ahead. So that thought came to mind, because it's similar to what happened over here with Rav Papa. Rav Papa met this fellow, Rav Huna ben Rav Yeshua. He knew him. He was his friend. He comes to visit him. He says to him, have a nice trip. Have goodbye and good luck. Okay, he says to him, it's soon time for you to kick the bucket. We're all waiting. And then he doesn't die. He lives. He lives to die another day. It's the name of a movie, right? He lives to die another day. And he's embarrassed. He comes into the yeshiva. So he was embarrassed. Amr l'Rafun b'Rabbi Yeshua. My chazis. So the Gemara here, you have to figure out what the Gemara over here means in this. What did you see? In other words, don't tell me you weren't about to die. You don't tell me you're al derech hateva, you were a goner. He's basically like apologizing to him, but at the same time telling him, don't blame me. He is defending himself because you were already in the other world. What did you see in the other world? You had already at a moment where it was called out of body experience. Is that what it's called today? And it's there are books on this. Go on Amazon. You'll find books of people who already were dead, so to speak. And they came back.
Yeah, near-death experience.
More than near-death. Mamish death. It's called out-of-body. An out-of-body experience. And they tell you in vivid detail what they saw, what they experienced.
I had the experience 2 or 3 times to ask a person that question.
And what did they say?
Nothing.
What do you mean nothing?
They saw nothing.
Okay, that's
no memory, nothing.
Okay, that was some people no memory, but the, go on Amazon. Okay, so you know, as you're challenging the authenticity of these stories, I agree with you, but there's only one problem. The one problem is that we have a makar in the Gemara that it does happen. Oh, so that's your answer. That you can't compare the Amoraim. Absolutely, I agree with you 1,000,000,000%. You can't compare the Amoraim to people today. But is it a matter of holiness? Is it a matter of this out of body experience? Something which only is depends on kedusha, or maybe it's a reality. Just like the Amoraim ate food, so we eat food. There are certain things that are common to humanity. It's not dependent upon spirituality. So today, due to modern medicine, it's just not common anymore. Because due to modern medicine, people don't just die. Don't die in a state of consciousness. It doesn't happen today. It's very rare today. Modern medicine, they'll be drugged. When the person is not well, they're gonna be medicated. They're gonna be medicated and drugged to a point where when they're dying, they're not in a state of consciousness that they could ever go and tell us whatever happened if they come out of it. Because that's the way modern medicine is. But in ancient times, where there was no such thing as morphine, and there was no such thing as all of these things, they hook these machines, people, many times, they died in a state of consciousness. And then a miracle happened, or something happened, they came out of it. And then they had what to say. So the question is that a spiritual experience, or is that just a reality of death? And they can tell us what happened. He said to Machazis, what did you see? You were really half dead, and you came back. What did you see in the other world? Amar lahu, so he told him, Enoch Enam, you're right. V'amar lahu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hoyl since V'loy Moikim Emilia, he told him, you know something, you're right. I was an outer death experience, and I was in Shemayim, and I was between life and death, and I saw there was a Din Torah in Shemayim, and I saw that the Ribbono Shalom himself said, Hoyl V'loy Moikim Emilia, he's Mavir Al Midoisov. He does not get insulted. People insult him and he accepts the insult. Ein Al Midoisov, Loi Lo Sikumu Bahade. Hashem himself says, don't be medactic. Don't go and analyze his record and go and cause him to die prematurely. Loi sekumu bebehadei, loi se daktiku achrav shnemar noise oven v'oiver al pesha. Our Gemara, lemi noise oven l'oiver al pesha. To whom is Hashem noise oven? To a person who is the person who's oiver al oiver pesha. Okay, so this is an illustration. This story comes to illustrate this Maimer Chazal that it says in this pasuk, noise oven to whom. To a person who was oiver al pesha. Okay, next, my mechazal. Rav Chuna b'shem Rabbi Avoha, b'shem Avoha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ein lufanav shicha. Before Hashem, ein shicha lefnei chisei chivadecha. Right. Now that is a very challenging pasuk. Why is that challenging, that pasuk? Because there are two things that are challenging to us regarding the midas of Hashem. There are three things. Death, sleeping, and forgetting. Because we have a principle, man is created in the Tzelem Elohim. Ki b'tzelem Elohim bara, man is created in the Tzelem Elohim. That means everything that you see by Hashem, you have to find by man. Everything you find by man, you have to find by Hashem. What are the three problems? The atahu melech chai v'kayam. Hashem, what's the nusach? The atahu Melech kel chai v'kayam. Hashem is the Melech who is chai v'kayam. Hashem does not die. There's no such principle as death by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Number two, by Hashem, Hashem does not sleep. Man sleeps. Hinei lo yonu v'lo yishan shamer Yisrael. Number three, v'yein shicha lifnei chisei chivodecha. Okay, so you have to balance. You must balance these three midos against the basic principle that I call it, that man is created in the Tselem Elohim. Although it's true, these three things do not have any relevance. Shekha, Hashem does not forget, man forgets. Hashem does not sleep, man sleeps. And Hashem is Yatun Melech, Kel Chai Vekayam. Man is only here for a fleeting moment. So here he says, there's no Shekha, Ha Beshvil Yisrael Naaseh. However, maybe this really is where we do find an application of a similarity. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes believe that he forgets. How? This very pasuk. Kaviyachol Shoychin, my tam noise avayim, nosak siv. It says the way it's spelled. The way it's spelled is there are no dots in the pasuk, so we can read nosa in the past tense. In the past tense means that Hashem has carried, but the nidrash ki'ilu kasev nosa. That's indeed the way we read it. We read it noisei ksiv. Nosa ksiv chaser vav. V'nidrash ki'ilu kasuv nosa miloshein shicha. So here's the drasha. The word nasa is similar to the word of forgetting. Why is it similar to the word of forgetting? I'm not sure why. The word miloshan shikha. The word nasa. If you interchange the letters. We have to discover the reason behind that. I don't know. I'm not gonna guess now. But
and where is this chaser vav? What vav?
The way we read the word is no say. Look at the spelling. That's as if there's a vav. Right. We make believe a vav is put in the pasuk. A cholam mole has a vav. But in the pasuk there is no vav. That gives us that, which means that we have a right. There's a drasha, kriyat siv, to read it nosa, and nosa, or nosha. I think it means nosha. Now the sin is shin. Gina nosha, nosha. That's I didn't see the dot. I didn't see that. It means to dislodged. Okay, that's the drasha. Okay, the gina nosha is nosha. I'm sorry, we have over here. Nun shin alf. How do we read it? We read the cholam noy say. A cholam for the nun, and the next letter is a sin, not a shin, which we mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives. He's noy say avoin. The drush is don't read it with a cholam, no. Read it with a komatz, no. Don't read it with a sin, read it with a shin, which then means nosha. Nosha means to be dislodged. The gid ha-noshe. The
gid.
Lo tia noshe. Don't be. That's a different word. Lo tia no. Don't be a creditor. Don't come to demand to take money away from the person who owes you the money. No se. You're coming to a fellow. You have money in your pocket. Give it to me. Release that money. Remove the money from your pocket and give it to me. So the gid ha-noshe. The sinew was dislodged. When something is dislodged in concept, that's the same thing as forgetting something. Hashem forgot. Oh, very good. Menashe, excellent. Menashe, why is Menashe Ephraim and Menashe? Nashani Elohim. I have forgotten. Hashem has allowed me or caused me to forget my father's home. To forget. So you see the word Nashani, Menashe, Ephraim, and Menashe. Menashe is with a shin, not with a sin. So that is the drasha. Very beautiful drasha. We have here Mikel Kamoicha, Noisei Avoin. How does Hashem forget, forgive our sin? He makes believe that he forgets. Does Hashem really forget? There's no such thing as Hashem forgetting because Ein Shechol Lefnechi Seichevodecha. And so we read it as Nosha. Okay, let's go further. Next. Next, Mam Chazal. Lefi Sha'amar Lacha Moshe Lishol Devarim Shkoshim Tchila. Moshe Rabbeinu in Parashas Hazinu. He uses very harsh words. Mizeirav Ulechume Reshef. What do those words mean? It means pangs of hunger. Mizei means convulsions. When a person is extremely hungry, his whole body shakes. Mizei means convulsions. Of a famine. Ulechume Reshef. Reshef is a demon. The Pshutoy Shel Mikra. Ulechume Vloshav Milchama. The demons are waging war against you. Like we learned yesterday in the Sefer Hasidim. Okay, you have demons coming to attack. So bichutz tishakel chalef umechadonim ema. Outside, Rachmana Litzlan, the sword is causing parents to be bereaved from their young children who are dying in battle. Umechadonim ema. And indoors, there is terror. You don't know what's going to be next. Uve choyrev hiktsavtem. We're going through all the now we're going backwards in Chumash Devarim, all the different complaints. Moshe Rabbeinu, you take the entire Chumash Devarim, you go through all the psukim. He has a long litany of complaints. Uvi Chorev Hiksavtem, in Chorev you have angered Hashem with the Egel, Mamim Hayisem, Chazav Yomlochem, Divrei Nichumim. The very last parasha of the Torah, V'zois HaBracha, according to Chazal, is a response to the entire Sefer Devarim. Chumash Devarim from beginning to end is Musar. Harsh words of Toichacha, rebuke. So the rule is you don't end off on a bad note. At the end of the Musar there has to be love. That's a very important lesson in letter writing. When you write a letter to the editor and you curse out whatever you want to say nasty about what you're complaining about, the end of the letter should conclude with blessing and with praise.
That's the word sincerely.
Very good, excellent. Well, sincerely is a general letter. I mean, many times when you write a letter, you're writing nice things. But I'm talking about specifically when you write Musa. Person writes into a newspaper a complaint. I'm fuming mad. I can't sleep for weeks because I saw a 99-year-old woman in the corner of a picture on page 132. You look very, very carefully at that picture and study under a microscope, you will discover there was a woman who happened to be 99 years old. And for months, I can't sleep. You have contaminated the sanctity of the world. So you write a letter and you quote every Maimer Chazal you can dig up and you make up some and you misconstrue. So the rule is, after all of your bitterness, at the end you should say, and by the way, we deeply appreciate this beautiful product that you produce, and you're so kind to give us entertainment and information. You have to always end off with Divrei Nechama. Divrei Nechama. Who do you learn this from? Moshe Rabbeinu, V'zois HaBracha. The entire Chumash Devarim is a tirade. The tirade from Eileh Hadvarim Asher Dibrei Moshe, Dvarim Kashim. It's a tirade, but the very end has to be Vizois HaBeracha Asher Berach Moshe. That's the Musa Haskel. Yeah.
I think there's also a philosophy of the Hefer. In other words, at the beginning of the letter, you give him all kinds of shvach, you butter him up, and in the last paragraph, you put the knife in and turn.
And the last paragraph, you what? You stick the knife in. He's saying very good. You're saying very, very good. You have to go and study this. If you find a precedent for this in Chazal, I hear what you're saying. There's a technique. You draw people in. Well, that's what Kolev did. He made believe that. I'm sorry. Take that back. Okay. I hear what you're saying. V'zois habracha shabirach Moshe u'mimenu lamdu kol neviim. Moshe Rabbeinu is one of the Yud Gimel. This is a beautiful thing he's saying now. Which, if you ever write a sefer, anyone here wants to write a sefer on the Yud Gimel Ani Mamins, this is very, you have here a very critical piece of information that you need for your Sefer. We have 13 Ani Mamins. Why did the Rambam have to go through the effort of breaking up the prophets into two groups? Moshe Rabbeinu Ani Mamin Shlema Shemoshe Rabbeinu Hu Av HaNevim. Okay, Moshe Rabbeinu is the Av, the father of all of the prophets. Finished. And then Nochamo. Ani Imam Ben Shlomo Shekol Divrei Hanaviim Heim Divrei Emes. No, Moshe is a Navi. The only, you can limit it to so few things, so few principles of Emunah. What do you have to break it up into Moshe and to all the other Nevi'im? Just summarize it in one of the principles of faith. We'll have a nice round number, 12, Keneged the Shiftei Ka. Why do you have to break it up into two different Ani? Why did the Ramban have to break it up into two separate statements? And the answer is, there are such fundamental differences between Moshe Rabbeinu and the other Nevi'im that's right. We don't even have the slightest clue what prophecy is. We are total fools to even think that we can even relate to even a teeny fraction of what prophecy is. But one thing we have to realize is that Moshe Rabbeinu and the other Nevi'im are worlds apart. And the Rambam made a very powerful statement by separating them into two different statements. And here we get a glimpse, a teeny little glimpse into the difference. And that is, all of the Nevi'im are in the dark as to their method, their technique in speaking to the Jewish people, if not for Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu went on a tirade. Ela hadvarim. That was his words of Nevuah. Okay, the first four books of the Torah was straight from Hashem. The Chumash Devarim, he was given an opportunity to also have an input. Nevuah, it was similar to the other prophets, where he was also given an opportunity to express himself in his own choice words. And in doing so, he taught them a technique. The technique is you start with Musar and you end with Bracha. And they learned from him, when they gave Musar, they start with Musar and they end with Bracha. We're learning now the three last psukim of Sefer Micha. The three last psukim of Sefer Micha are words of Bracha. It's, you should preface Pasuk Yud Ches, V'zois HaBeracha, Ashaberach Micha, Es B'nei Yisrael. That's really what it's saying over here in this Mechazal. Omenu Lamdu Kol HaNevi'im, Shehoyu Oymim Lachem Liyisrael, Dvarim Kashim Techila, V'choyzim V'oymim Lachem Divrei Nechamois. V'chein Micha. That's why we have this Chazal, this Pesukim here. Amalohem, Soinei Toiv, this is going back, he's summarizing the whole Sefer. Soinei Toiv, Oyevei Ra. You people, Klal Yisrael, you have big problems. You need help. You people, you hate to be good, and you love evil. Goizlei oiram me'aleihem, you're willing to strip a person naked, to take off his skin from upon them. V'yomer v'asher ochlu she'er ami v'oiram me'aleihem hifshitu. They have consumed the remnant of my people, and they have stripped their skin from upon them. In other words, these very people, we learned these psukim back before, different psukim which describe horrible different midos that Micha is trying to correct. Yeah?
He says Lashon Hara against B'nai
Yisrael. It's not...
Elyon.
I don't know.
He taught the Tocham Temes Sefatayim Onchi Yoshev. And he was punished because he told Nina he was caught here.
Correct. We find that he's making a very good point. How is he even allowed to say these things? And when in fact, you have proof that he's not allowed to say these things because Hashem criticized Yeshaya and Hashem criticized Eliyahu Hanavi, Pinchas. So the answer is, you're allowed to criticize. It's l'to'eles. It's for a purpose. And the purpose is for improvement. You're allowed this constructive criticism. Constructive criticism is a mitzvah. It's not a reshus, it's not an avera, it's a mitzvah. And it's required. Lashon hara l'to'eles is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. However, balance. It's a slippery slope. You have to know when you're going too far. There has to be, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu criticized Eliyahu, when Hashem criticized Yeshaya, it's because they went over the red line. There's things that you can say, things that you cannot say. If Hashem did not criticize Micha, it means Micha did not step over the red line. What he said was correct. There's a limit how far you have to go. They knew the limits. Let's go further. Well, that's the chiluk this. That's the whole beauty of what we're learning over here. The chiluk this. Now we have more of an appreciation of what we learned in the Radak. The Radak over here says it's divrei shevach. It says divrei. The Radak over here says mikel kamocha divrei hanavi kineged or kel yisparach. He's prayer. He's davening. What do the mitzudo say? Mikel kamocha hanavi l'shabeach Hashem. It's not prayer. This is praise. What did the Malbim say? Mikel Kamacha. B'siyum devarav yitin hodoya. Hoda, hoda. Ho is hoda the same thing as shevach? Not necessarily. What does the Chazal say? None of the above. It's not a prayer. It's not hoda. It's not shevach. It is kavod. It is honor. It is blessing. Now we get more of an appreciation. Ayin, everyone is correct. There are many dimensions. Ayin, panam l'Torah. You have one pasuk, one concept, and there are many different ways to understand this principle. What exactly is Micha here doing at the end of Sefer Micha? Is he offering a prayer? Is he giving shevach to Hashem? Or is he giving hoida? It's different. Hoida means thank you. Thank you is normally used, you did this, and therefore I say to you, thank you. Shevach is, you didn't do anything for me, but I still want to praise your greatness. It's a different connotation. Shevach and hoida, we all could appreciate, is not the same thing. And according to Chazal, it's none of the above. Their saying is, Micha here is coming to bless. I want to, it's like a tefillah, but it's not a bracha is not the same as a tefillah. A tefillah is more general. A bracha means I'm asking Hashem that you should be blessed. It's a splitting hairs, but there are differences between the two. Excellent. So Mikol Kamoicho, no sevav pashal shadach losolach la rapoki chavei tzchi yoshev yachmeni 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 Next Chazal, so the Lubim until you test this Zodcha, Koi Omar, Golcha Omar Lefana, Ribbon Shalom, Emosa Ata Miskadel Beolomcha. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ata Achiloisala Haris Avduch as Golcha Vies Yodcha Hachazoka, Parshas for Eschanon. Right? You have begun Ata Achilos. So this was the prayer that Moshe should be allowed to enter into Eretz Yisrael. Ata Achilos Laharis Avducha as Godlucha. Your greatness. What does that mean, your greatness? Simple translation of the words. What does that mean? So the Chazal tell us, based upon this pasuk, B'shosh ato koivesh es midas hadin. Greatness is restraint. Greatness is a synonym for givura. Ezehu gibur. Hakoivesh es yitzro. A person is able to restrain his desire, his impulse, his natural inborn impulse to do something. Hold back. Control yourself. Restraint is the greatest expression of might. Where do we find by the Ribbono Shel Olam Givura? He nukes the world. He obliterated Sidoim Va'amoira in one shot. Is that? He obliterated the Egyptians. He opened up the sea and destroyed all of the Egyptians with all of their mighty weapons and forces. Is Gevura what he did? What other examples do we have in the Torah of Hashem's Gevura? Koirach, when Hashem opened up the earth and swallowed up Koirach v'chol adosai, is that called Gevura? No, what?
By the Keshes. By the rainbow.
Okay, that's in the form of Gevura, right? Gevura. So it's none of the above. When the Ribbono Shel Olam shows powerful force, shock and awe, that is not called Gevura. Is restraint. The fact that we are still here today in this room because Hashem forgave Klal Yisrael again and again and again, noisei avon l'she'eris nachalosai, the survivors of Klal Yisrael, the fact that we're here today, this is a much greater display, expression of Gevura than Kriyas Yamsuf.
You see it in the first Baruch HaShemoneh, Ata Gibor L'Olam Hashem, what are all the positive things? Soleach, Mechayel Mitim,
Not shock and awe.
The positive.
Restraint. But here we're saying it's restraint, holding back. The rainbow, Hashem created after the marble. What did Hashem say? I will no longer destroy the world. Restraint. That is Hashem's ultimate gevura. Mikel kamoich, and where do you see this? Atam miskadel b'olamecha b'shosh atu kovesh es midas hadin. Shenemar, this pasuk that we say on Yom HaKippurim, Mikel kamoicha, noisei avoin, Hashem is v'oiver al pesha, is an l'she'eris nachal asoy is what Moshe Rabbeinu said, ato hachilois alaharois avches god l'cha. This is true greatness. Next. L'she'eris nachal asoy, Amar Rabbi Acha, Rabbi Chanina, Moshel le'alya shemeina shel keves, the fat tail of a sheep. It's the fattiest part. Avol, the koitzba, but in the fat tail, there's a thorn. She'enoi miskoeh, so what happens? I skipped some words over here. Avol v'koitzba, devar tanchumin yesh v'pasik. Avol yesh v'soicha davar koshe. This pasik is the most beautiful pasik in the entire Tanakh. This is the fat tail of Tanakh. You have a sheep. So what's the most delicious part of the sheep? The alia, the fat tail. Okay, the female, only the female. By Karban Pesach, can you bring females? Which keves has which one has a fat tail? Only the females have it, not the males. The males do not have an alia. Of a sheep, only a female. That's why there was a Napi Koires, who used to go have a good dinner. He was very hungry, and he saw the Jews. They're very generous people. It's like today, you want a good breakfast, so you go into the Waldorf Astoria, and you make believe you're one of the guests, and you go for breakfast. They have a very big spread for breakfast, and they say to you, what room are you in? And you just say, I just don't remember. Okay, you can go in. And you go in there and you sit down, you have a nice, delicious breakfast, and you go back to your home and you brag. And you say, you see, these people didn't even realize I just had a breakfast worth $100. I walked in there, they I look like a Jew, they let me have it. So you say to him, did you have bacon? Did they give you the bacon? So what do you mean? No, I didn't get the bacon. You went to the Waldorf in Eretz Yerushalayim? And they didn't give you the bacon? They didn't give you the best stuff? So he goes back the next day, and he puts on another suit, and he comes, waits for another guy to guard the Shomer HaPesach, and he comes up, and he says, what room are you in? I forgot what room I'm in. Go in. Okay, you can go in. He goes in, and he has his food, and then he asks the waiter, where's the bacon? And he's wearing a nice big yarmulke to make believe that he's Jewish. Where's the bacon? And right away, they're very suspicious. And they say, who is this guy who comes every day for breakfast? He's not in the hotel. Arois! And they take him out. That's exactly what happened in the Gemara. A fellow, Eri Pesach, Karban Pesach, they roast, the smell of the roasted Karban Pesach was delicious. I also want to. And he joins the Chabura. Kol Yisrael Chaverim. We're all chaverim. And he sits down and he has a delicious piece of the Karban Pesach. And he goes back home to Rome and he tells all the goyim, he makes litzanis, I go and I have a free dinner with the Jews when they have the Karban Pesach. So there was a Jew there who saw what was going on. So he says, did they give you the alia? The fat tail of the animal? No. So they're not treating you well. They're not giving you the good stuff. So next year he goes back and he joins the Chabura and he says to the Bnei, can I have also from the Alia? You want the Alia? The Alia is only on a female sheep, not on a male sheep. Don't you know? Every child in kindergarten knows. Min, you only bring a Karban Pesach from the males, not from the females. Something doesn't make sense here. And they launched an investigation, and they discovered this whole charade. And they killed him. Okay, so over here, this pasuk is the Aliyah. Tanakh. Go through the entire Tanakh. What's the most luscious, delicious pasuk of the entire Tanakh? The pasuk we just learned. The fact that we, Mikel Kamoicha, who is like the Ribbono Shel Olam? Noisi Ovon V'Oiver Al Pesha. Unbelievable. The most delicious pasuk. Problem is, in the most delicious pasuk, if you eat it, you can get a thorn stuck in your throat, and they're going to take you to the hospital, and they're going to do emergency surgery to get that thorn out of your esophagus. Because there's a thorn in the pastic that dulls the delicacy that we have here, and that is Aval Yesh Besaycha Davar Kasha L'she'eris Nachalasai V'loy L'chol Nachalasai. Not everyone's gonna make it. Scary, huh? Scary stuff. Shemoichel Rak L'mishemesim Atzmai Kishirayim. Hashem only forgives those who are humble, who make themselves into nothing. She'enoy Miskoez, not arrogant. Okay, that's the Chazal of this pasuk. It's the most beautiful pasuk, but it is a stinging message in the pasuk here as well. L'sheiris, you have to be humble. If you're not going to be humble, you're not going to merit the bracha of the Noisei Avoin the Oivel Pesha. We'll continue with Shem tomorrow. You want to wish a Mazel Tov to have Kal.